Anais Nin, the author, wrote something I find myself returning to in clinical work. She wrote, "We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are." Clinically, I look at it this way. We don't encounter a situation without a prediction. We encounter it through what our system expects. This episode is about how this applies to our experience to both love and fear. Fear contracts, love expands. Sounds simple. But clinically, it isn't, because sometimes expansion actually feels dangerous. And sometimes contraction is actually helping us stay safe in an appropriate way. Today on the podcast, I want to go into this more about the familiar versus the unfamiliar and how that plays into this idea of expansion, contraction, and love and fear. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkelman. And today on the podcast, I want to talk about how we use contraction and expansion. And these are metaphors for patterns that the body is expressing, or maybe how we move through our life. They describe a cluster of things that often move together: attention narrowing or broadening, behavior options reducing or increasing, what receives more attention and what recedes into the background. Fear often organizes towards the narrowing. When the system detects a threat, either real or imagined, the attention focuses. And often we lose options, not because they aren't available, but because we just don't see them. The body prepares for a specific response. A system that narrows in the presence of danger is doing something adaptive. Fear doesn't always produce contraction. It can produce hypervigilance or scanning, but narrowing is one of the characteristics of it. Love, on the other hand, and I mean this in the clinical sense, often organizes the system towards a greater availability. Attention broadens. More of what's present becomes receivable. Options often increase. Love doesn't always produce expansion either. Sometimes it produces grief or boundary settings or a protective action. If you're a parent, you understand this. You protect your child by setting a boundary, right? But generally, there's greater availability, and that's one of its primary characteristics. The nervous system doesn't respond only to what is in front of it, though. It responds to what it is predicting or what it has experienced in the past. And I think that's where the Nin observation translates, clinically speaking. The system doesn't encounter a situation neutrally. It encounters it through its past and what its expectation is, built from what it's already experienced. And here is what this means in terms of the polarity. Expansion isn't always about feeling better. It's being able to experience more of what is there. And sometimes that includes things that are difficult emotions, grief or sadness or anger or frustration, right? Including things that are larger than what the system has learned to hold. So I want to give you a couple of examples about this. So the first is about a patient I'll call Sarah, who'd done a lot of relational work by the time I had met with her. She was avoidant attached style, And she understood her pattern really well. At the time that I started working with her, she had been in this relationship for about 2 years. And this was someone she cared deeply about. He was consistently present, reliable, warm. And by everything she could measure, she felt safe. Now, she kept finding reasons to create distance, not big ones, not dramatic, small things, staying late at work when she didn't need to, for example. Or maybe she was a little less present in conversations than she knew she could be. She organized around a low-grade unavailability that she saw herself doing but couldn't stop. One day she said to me, "When he's fully present with me, something in me wants to run away. Not because he did anything wrong, but the full presence from someone who mattered seemed to activate something in her." And that is a condition where loss becomes possible. The closer the contact, the greater the exposure. Expansion, genuine opening towards someone who is safe, actually felt threatening. Now, the prediction made sense given what she had learned and what her past was. It just wasn't accurate to the experience she was in, at that time. And her system was responding to safety as though it was dangerous. This was running an old program, in a sense, in a new situation. And every time she organized around the old program rather than the present, that predictive mechanism gained more confirmation. She rarely stayed long enough to gather enough present-day evidence to update that program. That's what this series means by love, by the way. It's not the feeling, it's the capacity to remain available to what matters and to the new, the connection to reality, to yourself, without losing the capacity to protect yourself if necessary, right? She understood that this existed within her. She just hadn't learned how to use it yet. Have you ever felt like this? Have you ever felt something good and felt yourself immediately looking for what it's going to cost you? That's the contraction organizing before you've decided anything. And we often do this in very subtle ways. I'm going to give you another example. This is a patient who lost his father, and they had a very complicated relationship. So it wasn't a simple loss. And this often happens, by the way, for many of my clients over the years, where a parent dies that they've had a very challenging relationship with. And the way that they manage their grief is confusing. It can be very confusing to someone. Now, in this case, this patient, there is love and there is unfinished business. And often that's what's going on here. And in the months after this person's father died, he tended to stay busy. He functioned well. He was managing. He was handling things. But there was a quality to those months he would later describe as some distancing himself from something he couldn't name, like he was trying to run away from something. And one evening he found himself holding a photograph, not intending to grieve, but he was just holding it. And something loosened in him, and he stayed with it, and he didn't put the photograph down. And he said afterwards that he really missed his father. He said, "I'm still angry with him about the things that would never be resolved, but I loved him, and I wish things had been different." And all of those things were true simultaneously. And he didn't know how to hold all of that at once. It was just a lot for him. And the system had been organizing around the grief, similarly to how Sarah's system organized around the intimacy, not because the grief was dangerous, but because fully experiencing it meant entering territory the system didn't know how to inhabit yet. What this person finally recognized was that fully entering the grief meant accepting how much was gone and how much it had mattered. The system was programmed to run away from that, to contract, if you will, from that. Not because grief was itself necessarily dangerous, by the way, but because fully entering it is unfamiliar. And for those of you in Western culture, particularly in the United States, we don't do grief very well. What this person encountered in that moment wasn't relief. He didn't feel better. He felt more. And the loss became more real. The relationship became more real. All of it, the love, the difficulty, the anger, the things that weren't said. And it was that depth that was freeing to him. Now, Sarah was afraid of opening towards someone, whereas this other person was afraid of opening to an experience. In both cases, the contraction was protecting against something that the system didn't know how to hold. Sometimes the system contracts because it doesn't know how to experience what it is that is unknown, right? And I think that's the important piece to recognize here. So I'm going to take a quick break. And on the other end of this, I'm going to talk about what the target is in this. So stay tuned. Hello and welcome to Ask Dr. Gill. I am your host, Dr. Gill Winkleman, and today we're talking about fear and love and contraction and expansion and what this means and how we can build this into our lives and understand something. So one of the things that I would say is that fear and love aren't exactly opposites, although that is a piece about them that people talk about, you know, that hate is not the opposite of love, fear is the opposite of love. And I think there's some truth to that. But in this context that I'm talking about, in the sort of the neurological context, they are different directions in terms of how a system moves, right? The clinical target isn't necessarily to be just in love. It's to be able to engage with both. It's about creating the flexibility to engage with life. And, you know, love isn't just the absence of contraction. It's the ability to have a range that protection doesn't have to be disconnection, right? your nervous system isn't supposed to stop contracting. It's supposed to know when contraction is necessary and when it isn't and how to come back out of it. And it's something worth naming for the person who's learned how to override contraction in the name of healing. That person doesn't need more openness. They need permission to protect themselves when protection is the intelligence response. And some people have learned, for example, that boundaries are selfish, or that saying no means abandonment, or that withdrawal or not expanding means failure. These people need, as much as anyone, the range to close when closing is what the situation calls for. As an example, I have a friend who was offered a promotion at work and turned it down because he knew that going into the level of management, he would hate his job. He would just not want to do it anymore. And a lot of times, you know, in terms of our society, we say that that's contraction, right? You're saying no to what the universe is offering you. And I would say that is actually appropriate sometimes, you know? And I've had patients who've been unable to say no in those situations and were miserable and didn't know what to do at that point. They were making more money and they had more responsibility. And I think, you know, that can be the contraction, if you will. So now sometimes fear appears at the edge of what is known. It's an unfamiliarity, right? It's like you don't know what to do with it because you don't know what's on the other side. And the unknown feels unsafe, right? Sometimes the unknown is safe but unfamiliar. Sometimes the unknown does have danger. And sometimes the unknown contains something meaningful precisely because it's unfamiliar, because you don't know what it is on the other end of it. Like Sarah, she didn't know how to engage with her partner because she didn't know what that experience of being held was like, you know, and what the on the other end of that would be. Because the nervous system doesn't automatically update, you know, on its own. That's where discernment begins. The signal is information, not a verdict. How much of this response belongs to what's happening now? And how much of this belongs in what we've known and our predictive assignments? The work is learning how to ask that question in the moment, not just in retrospect. In other words, range isn't just the ability to feel everything. It's the ability to assess multiple responses when the situation changes. The person with range can approach, they can pause, they can stay, they can leave, they can protect, they can revise, they can open. Not through willpower alone, through experiences in which this becomes possible. And the work happens in the moment before the old response takes over. Can you notice the contraction before obeying it? Can you stay one breath longer before you leave? The pause isn't the answer. It's just where another response has a chance to become available. So fear contracts, love expands, and both of these are true, but neither is necessarily the point. The point is range. Sarah learned to stay one breath longer, and in doing that, opened up a whole new world for herself. And she and her partner actually are married and have a beautiful life together. My other patient with the photograph, he learned that he could hold that and let the tears come and hold the photograph without putting it down and feel the range of experience that was there. Nothing about the loss changed, but his capacity to encounter it had. We don't see things as they are. We see things as we are. And sometimes what happens is love takes us beyond what is known and the self knows how to hold. And that's the question beyond all of this. What does love mean in the environment you first learned love? What is it about how I see the world that I can open myself to see it differently? Right? And that's really what I think is the work at some level, is understanding, oh, I am seeing this in a particular way that I've learned to see it. And what is beyond that? And what happens when I can see it differently? Next week, we'll go more into that. And if you like the show, please leave a review or a comment about the podcast or wherever, whatever platform you're on watching this. And thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next time.